Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Eric, a lot of places where we can start the show tonight, I think, but I'm going to stay in this Ring of Honor lane to start things off. A good match between Deonna Purrazzo and Mercedes Martinez for the undisputed Ring of Honor World Championship. Nothing against the match, nothing against the women, but I just think that if you're going to main event your flagship show with a undisputed championship match like this, you very much need to put some context behind that match so that there's interest out there. I mean, the match was good. The crowd seemed into it here and there, but kind of flat. And, you know, I just think that if Tony Khan's going to continue to push this Ring of Honor thing, they have to give this thing some context so that it makes sense. Otherwise, you know, if you're an AEW fan and just an AEW fan, you saw in the Dynamite main event, Mercedes Martinez, an act that has lost quite a bit since her AEW Dynamite debut, and Deonna Purrazzo, who hasn't been on Dynamite at all. And I think you can't and shouldn't want to do that to your audience, and we've seen it now for a handful of weeks. So high level, Eric, I mean, Am I being overdramatic, or are you with me on this?
No. So if you were setting up these two to be your main event, which I was shocked by, when they did it, I assumed that maybe they said it earlier in the show, but I just missed it. I assumed Phoenix and Dante might be the main event, or Jericho, Santana, and they weren't. So if you were going to set this up, you needed to – I don't know that Mercedes Martinez has been on TV or mentioned very much since she won the belt at an ROH pay-per-view the Friday night of WrestleMania weekend, which is more than a month ago already, right? So one. Impact draws what? About 100,000 TV viewers a week? So you may not know who Deonna Purrazzo is. I mean, I know who she is because I'm a wrestling fan, but much of your audience might not know who she is. And so if you were going to do that, you needed to remind people a little bit about Martinez. You needed to tell people who Deonna Purrazzo was, show her, get some footage from Impact, whatever. Mm-hmm. And put in the effort to make it an actual main event, given all that. And so all of which leads me to this. The cynical view of this would be Tony Khan knew he's up against the NBA playoffs. He knows ratings are down because of that. He saw what happened to Raw on Monday in that score. People, you know, shows being hit, NBA playoffs take away from the demographic, take away from the total viewers. And mm-hmm. so he decided to go ahead and put this in the main event slot. He wasn't given much away on the show anyway. He could say he main evented another Dynamite with women. Look at how groundbreaking and progressive I am with that. Knowing he's going to basically eat dirt either way on the rating. And so, you know, I'll just go ahead and put this in that slot because who really cares? Because we're going to die a grisly death in the ratings tonight anyway. So that would be the cynical view of it. I don't know if you may connect those dots, but that's what a cynic might say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly viable, but you know, to me, if you have that same philosophy, but it's just with AEW talent that your audience knows, I can deal with that. I can deal with, I don't want to say phoning in, but being realistic about the fact that you're not going to have as big of an audience as you ordinarily would because of the NBA playoffs. So you're not going to go with, you know, a big CM Punk Adam Page confrontation, knowing that fact. I get that, but if you're trotting out two stars that nobody really knows and that there's no context for in your show, you're not just phoning it in, but like you're making it hard for the diehard AEW audience who is watching you instead of the NBA. You're making it hard for them to follow your product. And that's where I have a bigger problem with that strategy, if that is the strategy. So that's, I guess that's even more of a cynic point of view.
Yeah, I don't think they made a good faith effort tonight, and that is what it is, and you know you'll probably see you had a hot crowd tonight, hot throughout the show. They were dead for that match, right? It only went 9-10 minutes. Mm-hmm. They cynically pushed I guess they were protecting kayfabe by saying we're going to stay with this as long as it takes. Did anyone believe they were going to waste like they've done an overrun once for 30 seconds a couple weeks ago? And does anyone think they're going to blow an overrun on this match? I mean, no. And you know, they tried to hammer that home twice. I guess if they put in a little more effort at setting it up, you could say they made a good faith effort. I don't think they didn't. So I guess, mm-hmm. you know, you're left to draw cynical conclusions as an analyst of wrestling.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and so where this leaves me as far as questions for you go on this topic, and I'm sure our callers will get into it here in a little bit too, but you know, what, assuming that it's not that, right? It's not that, hey, okay, Tony Khan's just kind of phoning it in, NBA stuff. You know, take the other point of view. Like, is there a good reason for Ring of Honor championship matches to be headlining AEW Dynamite on TBS every week?
I mean, I maintain that they haven't explained why yes. there are Ring of Honor matches, right? Short of Tony Khan making his big announcement a couple months ago that he was buying it. He didn't actually close on it till today, I guess, but he's been running it since WrestleMania weekend. Mm-hmm. They haven't explained why. All they need to do is, I guess there's some explanation given. The truth is, they're keeping Ring, I think Tony Khan has said this in interviews, they're keeping Ring of Honor alive until they can figure out distribution for television, whether they get a TV show, whether they get a streaming show, or whether they're just putting it up on YouTube, right? But they just, that's not been explained, that all of a sudden, outside of one Tony Khan announcement at the beginning of a show when he, you know, made one of his rare appearances on live television, with that promo he cut that people remember, he hasn't explained why. Okay, so we're going to have some ring. You're going to mix in some Ring of Honor matches. I mean, just have somebody explain it. Tony Schiavone is the on-screen mouthpiece for Tony Khan. Explain what. Hey, Ring of Honor, we're intermixing some of their stars and some of their titles, and as we go along here in AEW, as we wait to see what the future of Ring of Honor holds. I mean, just I guess that's implied at this point, but just explain it to your audience.
I agree 100%. I think that's been missing since day one of this. And really, like, Tony Khan owning Ring of Honor now and you know, assuming he's going to find distribution and run that company, yeah, maybe as a little bit of a feeder system and connected to AEW on the periphery, but as a separate entity, which is what it sounds like he's going to attempt to do, you know, you have like a built-in audience here of 1 million people that you can try to entice to watch that product or buy the whatever streaming network you get on for the ROH library at some point. Like you have that audience to speak to. And like, I just don't think trotting out Ring of Honor matches is enough to entice that group. You need to explain to them why Ring of Honor is important, why, you know, who came from, you know, that world and that company and why the championships matter, and then give those matches context. And I think not only does it give AEW Dynamite kind of more logic, but it also, you know, it kind of whets the appetite for potential Ring of Honor viewers down the road. And so I'm with you. I think they're absolutely missing the boat on that. We'll get to that and more, a Hangman Page promo that I want to make sure we talk about, and a host of other things. But we'll pause right there really quick, and we'll start taking calls here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, covering the May 4th, 2022 edition of AEW Dynamite. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things on the Wade Keller Hotline a little bit later tonight. We're running down the show, pwtorch.com/govip to check that out. It's a daily hotline that Wade does, and you can check it out as a VIP member, as well as a host of other really, really cool podcasts, pwtorch.com/govip. You can also find us on Patreon as well. The other voice you hear tonight is that of pwtorch.com contributor Eric Kroll. Eric, always a blast to talk AW with you, man.
Thank you, my fellow Chicagoan. Wade Keller is going to have a field day because I sent him a text last week saying I had to bail from one of his podcasts that he did, the free one on Tuesday, because it was just this unrelenting negativity throughout the whole podcast, and we've spent the first 10 minutes just trashing tonight's main event and the presentation and handling of ROH. So touche, Wade. I'll take my punishment in advance.
Well, very, very good. Good, you know, good to know. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to hear his take on things and to hear the caller's take on things too. You don't have to, you certainly don't have to agree with us on this ROH thing, but we would love to, you know, hear your thoughts and opinions on that as well as everything else. We'll go ahead and open up the phone lines there, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. Press 1 to raise your hand and let me know that you want to get on. There are a lot of callers in the queue tonight, so do me a favor, you guys. Just keep it to one or two points so we can do our best to get to everybody. I can't guarantee that we will, but I will do all that I can to make sure that that happens. If you don't get a chance to chat with us, drop us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get into those emails throughout the show here. But with that said, Eric, we'll go ahead and take the first call. We'll start with Reverend Keith in Baltimore. Reverend Keith, thanks for calling. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight, man?
Thank you so much, Zach, for taking my call. Listen, I want to shed some light on what you and Eric was just focusing on. Ring of Honor has always been a hotbed here in Baltimore. It is the home of Ring of Honor. The offices were right here on 41st Street here in Baltimore, Maryland. And I truly believe that the reason behind Tony Khan wanting to place the Ring of Honor Undisputed Women's title match in the main event was to cater to the crowd at the Chesapeake Employers Insurance Arena. No, I was not in attendance, but just thinking along these lines, I've been in that building numerous times for Ring of Honor shows. It can seat just under 5,000, and I'm sure it was standing room only tonight. At least that's the way it looked on TV. But I'm thinking that Tony Khan wanted to give a treat to the fans here in Baltimore who have followed Ring of Honor over the years, being that he just closed this very afternoon. You know, that's my thinking behind it, that he could have been doing it, you know, out of the goodness of his heart, so to speak, and to elevate Ring of Honor by putting them in the main event.
I think Reverend Keith raises a far less cynical point of view that may have some merit to it than us. And if so, then I think Tony Khan should have done a better job for the TV audience. The crowd was dead during that main event. He should have done a better job setting them up to succeed, right?
True.
Video package, maybe a short video package, maybe a in-ring promo, maybe even an angle where Perazzo attacks her, Martinez before the match, you know, backstage. Something to get the TV crowd and the crowd in the building a little bit more excited about what they were going to see.
Yeah. That's where I'm at with it. Like, I think that's an important, like, if that's the reason, you know, then tell that story. I mean, that Reverend Keith, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's the context that I think is supremely important to deliver to your audience if that's the way you're going to go with things. Like, that, it's right there. And in this case, it's on a silver platter for you. Tell that story. Give the history of Baltimore to Ring of Honor and the importance of that city to the company. Like, do that. I still think there's issues with running that main event out there, even if they did that, because just of the two talents that were involved and there's just lack of exposure that they have to the general AEW audience. But if you're going to, like, give a nod to the history of Ring of Honor and do that match anyway, then you have to go even the further mile to get that match into a position where it can deliver for you in that main event position, you know, playoff ratings or not. But you definitely may be on to something there, Reverend Keith, as to the reason. I still think, though, that they can – Tony Khan needs to put more juice behind that, even if he tries to pay homage to his newly acquired company in that way.
True. And a video package or two would have helped. Now, keep in mind, Mercedes has appeared on AEW TV many times before. Deonna, no. However, you know, I think that he was assuming that the fans know both these ladies, which, you know, everybody may not have watched Ring of Honor. Everyone may not follow Impact. So truly a video package would have helped. Now, my second point is I love this Joker option in this and among the brackets. I like that, and we all know from following AEW since its inception that they have used the Joker many a times before. My prediction is Cesaro. I think he would be an excellent addition to the AEW family, and just looking at who the first opponent for the Joker would be, Samoa Joe. They have history from Ring of Honor from years ago. So I would like to see that. What are your thoughts on who the potential Joker might be?
Yeah, this will be a fun debate to have and to think about here, Eric, throughout the next however many weeks until that match happens. I didn't catch that. But the AEW revealed the full bracket for the Men's Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. Rey Fénix versus Kyle O'Reilly, Samoa Joe versus The Joker, Jeff Hardy versus Darby Allin, and Adam Cole versus Dax Harwood round out that first round there, Eric. But as far as The Joker goes, I mean, did you have a person in mind? Is that person Cesaro or somebody else?
You know, there's so many people who've been released. It could be anybody. My thought, given now that we got a peek at the brackets, it wasn't a very long peek, but it was enough of a peek for me to take a photo so I could analyze it. You know, on the right side of the bracket, I think you're headed to a Darby Allin, Adam Cole semifinals on that side of the bracket. And given that the Joker is facing Samoa Joe, I'm sort of lowering my expectations on who that's going to be. Samoa Joe, obviously, I'm guessing Tony Khan spent a lot of money to get him to come in, wants to protect him. And so my guess would be somebody on a Cesaro level would be who you're going to get. You know, somebody on a good worker who's going to put on a great match because it's not a pay-per-view, it's a TV show, but they'll put on a great match, but who won't. Who can take the loss, and then if they're signed full-time, you know, it's a new person, they can come in and they can rehab them, or if they are in for just a one-shot, they can take the loss and fade into oblivion or work independent dates, and they get a little bit more in their paycheck on the indies because of exposure on AEW Dynamite, right? But you wouldn't think they're going to bring in somebody to beat Joe this early, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it too. I didn't think it's Cesaro, to be honest, but I think that name fits there for sure, and it will likely be somebody on that level. You know, I because of the Samoa Joe factor, like, you're not going to beat him right now. There's just too many big matches for him to have in AEW, and so, you know, losing at this particular spot, I don't think makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think doing a quick bracket analysis here, just, you know, a handful of minutes after they came out, like, I kind of think you might be looking at, Eric, a Joe versus Cole final here.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and so, you know, you want to protect Joe in that regard. And I think Cesaro is somebody that fits kind of the Joker bill, you know? Like we've seen – I mean, who else has occupied that slot? Leo Rush has – Brian Cage, I think, has like that level of star. So Cesaro makes a heck of a lot of sense. I think that would fit nicely, Keith. Good call.
Yeah, Tony Khan does love himself some surprise debuts, right? He loves creating the Twitter buzz. And to me, that's pretty brilliant because for the next week, everybody's going to be asking the question Reverend Keith just sharply asked, which is,
yep,
who's going to be the Joker, right? And that's what people are going to talk about. So that's, well, That's a smart – wait, it might even be – I imagine they're doing – so they've got 2 weeks to and four shows, two Dynamites and two Rampages to get this tournament in, right, because the finals are at the pay-per-view. And, well, I guess they have 3 weeks maybe. 3 weeks? The 11th, the 18th, and the 25th. So, you know, they got some time, but they're doing two matches. Will they save the other semifinals for Dynamite on the 18th and then do they got to do semis at some point, right?
Yeah.
They could do it on the 25th, I guess, the go-home Dynamite. That might make sense. But we're going to have 2 weeks maybe now of speculating, unless they do it on Rampage next Friday, a week from Friday. We're going to have 2 weeks of people speculating on who the Joker is.
Yeah. Tony Khan, you know, you're right. He loves his surprise debuts. And, so it makes sense for there to be a Joker slot in this tournament. We'll see. Reverend Keith, back to you. Any final notes for us tonight before we move on to some other calls?
My third and final point of the evening is I noticed the intensity and the way in which Adam Page delivered his promo tonight. I thought it was very different. It was almost heelish, and he seemed like he had more of an edge, and I noticed how he mentioned Bret Hart, that, you know, this wouldn't be like a tributary match to Bret Hart, and that he's all about business. So do you perhaps see this as an impending heel turn, or is he just creating an edge? I'll let you marinate. Think of the answer to this question. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for taking my call and adhering to my points. Have a wonderful week.
You too, Reverend Keith. Thanks for making the call. Always good to talk to you. Yeah, Eric, so let's get to this. Adam Page, in the middle of the ring, cuts a very serious and direct and definitive, aggressive promo on CM Punk and his AEW World Championship match at Double or Nothing against him. I like this a lot. To me, it was not a heel turn. It's just a more aggressive Hangman Page that's a champion. Like that's how I took this. Now it certainly could serve as a foundation for a heel turn, but I just don't know if that's in the cards right now with him. When I listened to this promo and when I, you know, watched it back during one of the commercial breaks, like to me, Eric, this was the promo that Page needed to cut months ago. This was that kind of, okay, I'm moving on from the kind of wrestler that doubts himself, but wrestler that has won the big one and is the champion is going to act like it. And that's what this promo was. And so I think right away he gave this match a jolt of energy, a jolt of intrigue, and I think that is always a good thing. But I think it will also, you know, impact some of the crowd reaction as they build to Double or Nothing. So I like this, but I think it's going to have a kind of a residual effect on their program that you can't really know which way it's going to roll at this point. But what did you think as a big Adam Page fan?
Yeah, I mean, I think Page started a little bit slow, but then he showed fire. I mean, he definitely healed a bit here, right? There's no doubt he was booed for it too, right? And so the question I had, this is the same. So the question I asked Tony Khan after in Minneapolis in the press conference after Full Gear, while Bryan Danielson was sitting up there, was, Tony, you know, you have Page coming off an amazing match tonight against Kenny Omega. He won. You have a hot baby face, and you're programming him, not against Miro, but against Bryan Danielson, who at the time was even more, you know, was hotter than he is today, right, as a singles act. And I'm like, you're setting up this weird face versus face dynamic. How do you plan to account for that? Aren't you undercutting Hangman Page before he even gets out of the gate, because the fans are going to cheer for Bryan Danielson? They love him. And you saw what happened there, right? Danielson shaded heel, especially at the start. It was just sort of a shading, and then it was more obvious heel throughout the length of that feud. I think they're doing the same thing here, it appears, maybe a little less so, but we'll see in the coming weeks, where Paige is playing that Danielson role, because they know in a face-versus-face matchup, Hangman Page versus CM Punk, there's no way CM Punk's getting booed. CM Punk could be a prick to Page, and Punk's still going to get cheered because he's CM Punk, right? Been gone for 7 years. You know, the Teflon babyface can do no wrong. He's super over. Is the top star of AEW. You know, I think the ratings and pay-per-view buy rates bear that out. And so they decided, how do we account for this? Well, let's just shade Hangman Page on the heel side a little bit, or heelish enough, so that especially if they do plan to switch the title in Vegas at the end of the month, which I thought was a strong possibility just because of the length of time Page has held the belt, and just because Punk is so hot, if Page loses the belt and he's been heelish, that lets Page fans down a little easy. You're a little less disappointed if you're a Page fan. Maybe I will be a little less disappointed. Well, you know, Page was trending heel, and the big baby face won, right? Because the psychology will make sense. So that's, I guess that's my perspective as the Torch's resident Hangman stan.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting. I think that's a good point and well said on, hey, okay, we kind of know this is going to happen, so let's not ignore it. The thing of it is, you know, Punk is Teflon in a lot of ways, you know, but you want his the moment he wins that championship to be like a universal crowning moment for him in this company and his comeback. Like, I think that's, you know, that's the money in him winning the title. And I think, like, it'll be interesting to see whether or not, like, Adam Page, because to me, I was more excited for Page watching him cut this promo. It didn't, like, yes, it had heel undertones and he got some lines that got booed, but that aggressiveness and the confidence, to me, that was kind of like an attractive part of the promo, where you're like, hey, all right, geez, yeah, this guy, let's get behind this guy. And you forgot for a minute that, oh, wait, he's going up against CM Punk. So it'll be interesting to watch how and if the fans, you know, can just stay on Punk's side, or with this kind of heel-ish Page, where they do start to splinter, even if that's not the intent. But I thought his promo was good enough tonight where, you know, it could pull some fans back onto his side if they kind of had some doubt there. But overall I liked it, and I think it's like that's the Adam Page we need to see. Maybe not the heel one-liners, but the intensity, the confidence, just like the delivery all worked really well once he got going. Go ahead.
I mean, the other thing is life got in the way of this one. So Hangman Page had COVID, he said on Twitter, and so he was unable to make last week's show. Clearly, last week's show, they were going to shoot a big angle with both Punk and Hangman Page in the ring, and probably this would have come out that way. All right, there would have been another piece to the story at a minimum. Maybe they were saving the big promo for this week, but I think this would have been even more effective if the two are going head-to-head. You know, Punk, we saw versus MJF, Punk can hold his own with the zingers. If Punk's going to do some zingers, Hangman Page had the zingers tonight as well. It seems like they were trying to make the best of a less than ideal situation. I don't know, you know, maybe Punk was off tonight, or off, maybe he was out. You know, they said he wasn't there. I don't know if he was there or not. He's not booked for Rampage, so maybe he was off this week, or maybe he was filming something. Who knows? You know, it's less than ideal, but, you know, couldn't be helped. Life got in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, for sure. And you move, you pivot, you adjust, and then, you know, you're you got to live with what's left. So we'll see. But overall, a good night for Adam Page, I'd say. Back to the phones we go here. 443, you are up. Please state your name and where you're calling us from tonight. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes. 443, are you there? Can you state your name and where you're calling from tonight? We're doing good, man.
Hey, how you guys doing? Three, with the proud Baltimorean and Ravens fan. I am a podcaster as well with the Wrestling Wild Black. Yeah, definitely was a great AEW Dynamite. Only question I have or thing I wanted to bring up was when it comes to Dante Martin, what does this loss do for him? Where does he stand in the company? So far, it looks like in last year they put the rocket on him. They really put him in situations to win. And it looks like over the last couple of weeks, we haven't really seen much. He's taken a lot of losses. Where is he on the card? What do you guys see for his ceiling? And I really thought it might have helped him more to get put over, especially since Rey Fénix is coming back from an injury. That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks very much for the call. Were you in the building tonight?
No. Watching it from home. But when I saw
that
they were talking about our coach, I was really excited.
there you go. Very good. Well, appreciate the call, R3. Thanks for making it. And call again, okay? Dante Martin, Eric, good match tonight. I thought this match, like you, could have easily kind of served as the main event. I thought it was good. I thought they kind of showed, the style of match that people wanted to see. As far as Dante Martin goes, where are you at on him? I mean, you could talk about his performance tonight, but generally speaking, does this loss like significantly derail any momentum?
I don't think so, because I think the plan clearly, Tony was promoting Dante Martin as a star in Minneapolis last year on Full Gear. He got a win on that Rampage that Friday night. I think he was he on Full Gear? I think he might have been featured. He was one of the people Tony Khan brought out at the post game media scrum to talk about him and Dante and highlight him in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where he's from as a local star. And it did seem like they were, at end of last year, early part of this year, they were putting the rocket to Dante. He was getting a lot of high profile matches, some high profile wins. And then his brother came back kind of out of the blue, and they put him together as a tag team. And I thought, wow, well, Dante and Darius's path is set for the rest of 2022. They're going to compete in the tag division. I bet they get at least one tag title shot. They'll get high-profile matches. They'll bump for the Hardys, make the Hardys look good, and maybe they'll even go over. And I thought that was their potential. And then, unfortunately, Darius is injured in some way that I guess he said it's out of the ring. I don't fully know the details. I don't think they've come out yet. And so Dante you saw last week, he was stuck in the random six-man tag where he was one of the three, jobber dudes, essentially, if you're looking at it from an 80s WWE sort of TV way, a much better worker, obviously. So it seems like he's a little – they want to feature him, but – he's in spots where he's losing, right? And that's a step back for him. And I have to believe it's directly related to that wasn't the plan for him this year. The plan was for him to be in a tag team. As for R3's point, yeah, tonight's match, I didn't know who would win. If you were booked, and either of them legitimately could have gone over, and I don't think it would have made that much difference because, they're going to end up probably beating Kyle O'Reilly and facing Samoa Joe in the semifinals, maybe. And so if this match were booked in New Japan, Fénix definitely would have lost tonight because, as R3 astutely pointed out, he was in his first match back from an injury, at least I think on AEW TV. I think I saw him wrestle Saturday night in Mexico.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But first back match back in AEW, you could have booked him to lose. You could have set up the story to be that Fénix was just back from injury and he was a little rusty. They didn't do that. I mean, Fénix is the bigger star, more established. And so I don't have a problem with him winning, but it sure does seem like they got to find something for Dante Martin to do. I don't know how long his brother's going to be out, right? One of the questions I would have, is it better for Dante Martin to not be on TV doing jobs and waiting for his brother to heal, or is it better for him to remain, you know, part of the roster and in front of everybody as a guy who's viewed as a dynamic talent and a young star on the rise?
Yeah, it's a good question. But overall, I'm with you. I just think because of the injury to his brother, like whatever plans he had are just kind of a mess right now, obviously. And so now Tony Khan is just kind of filling holes with Dante Martin to get him on TV where he can. That has its pros and it has its cons. The pros of that are, I mean, Dante Martin is a very solid talent. He still has a ways to go before I think he can be, you know, a top tier player for that company. I think he needs to work on his character. I think he needs to work on his promo, his personality. Obviously the ring work is there and then some, but you know, he has to develop that other part of his game. And I think you get that by working. So, but then the con of that is, yeah, you're not going to have him go anywhere. All that said, I don't think this loss hurts him that much at all, though, because I think even if he wins this, he wasn't going to be the guy that was going to win that tournament. And so, you know, you just kind of keep him out of that and he can, you know, go another way. But I just don't think that the match had enough meaning behind it where it's going to drastically alter, you know, his trajectory within the company. I think he's still an up and coming act and is just going to be on the back burner for a bit while his brother heals up. And, you know, he can use this time to find himself as a performer and be ready for when his brother comes back. But I just don't think it hurts him all that much, to be honest. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but I think he was not in a position tonight where he had anything really on the line other than qualifying for the Owen Hart tournament. And, you know, all things considered, right now we don't know what the winner of that really means to the company. Am I making any sense there? Like, it just,
yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't, it doesn't, in the immediate short term, this loss doesn't do anything to hurt his stock in AEW. Over the long haul, you would hate to see him jobbing on TV every week because he gets defined down big time if he's losing matches 2-3 times a month on Dynamite.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get back to the phones here. 814, you are up. I believe this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, but if it's not, state your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, you're correct. My first question is on the MJF feud with Wardlow. Do you feel that MJF will get a younger, stronger bodyguard to replace Wardlow, such as like a big-time Ben Bishop who's been on some of like the YouTube shows for AEW, or a different giant that's like an up-and-coming wrestler, just to sort of get that first victory over Wardlow?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. Or not that point specifically, Ryan, but like what they do as far as booking a finish to this match, you know, when they go to it. You know, obviously, it wasn't announced as a Double or Nothing match, but I think that's obviously where they're headed. Like, how do they get out of this thing and either, while making sure Wardlow stays strong, but also protecting MJF, and a way to do that could be to like introduce somebody new. So I think that play, Eric, is very much. Is very much in the cards at this point as to how to go about the finish for this at Double or Nothing when it goes down. I think a spin-off topic that I want to make sure we get to, and we'll tackle it now just because of what we're talking about. Tonight I thought was just a tremendous presentation of Wardlow, and in it you can really see like a money act there. And he's not the guy that I think is going to have, you know, five-star match classics, you know, but he does have a presence right now. And yes, he's opposite the hottest heel in the company in MJF. That absolutely matters. And MJF is doing wonders for Wardlow right now. But, you know, that the audience response when he was decimating those security guards, and especially after that second round, I mean, people were up out of their seats cheering for him. That kind of thing matters. That resonated. And so, Eric, I'm not sure what the plan is as far as how they're going to book him in that match with MJF, but tonight to me was a kind of a moment for Wardlow where it's like, okay, there's something here that, you know, that Tony Khan may need to continue to feed.
Yeah, to answer Ryan's question, I think they split up the Pinnacle, obviously, so I don't think that they're going to – I don't think they need to replace Wardlow's bodyguard position. I think Sean Spears as the chairman sort of serves that role now, whatever you think of Sean Spears. I think – so they've got what? They've got 3 weeks for this angle before the pay-per-view. 1 week is going to be the contract signing, like next week, right, in Long Island, which I'm – you know, the last time they were in Long Island, it was MJF kissing up to his hometown crowd and being – portrayed as sort of a baby face, which I know some people clutched their pearls for a while thinking this would make MJF an ineffective heel. It was a 1 week blip and MJF was back to being booed. You got the contract signing. We haven't gotten the Sean Spears Wardlow match, right? Where Wardlow just powerbomb symphonies him into oblivion. You're going to get that before the pay-per-view, 'cause that just makes logical sense. So that's 2 of the 3 weeks. And then, you know, I don't know, they're doing something every week. I guess you could find another. They're going to lay MJF is going to lay out his stipulations, and you know, MJF has followed a pattern with this stuff. Cody had his stipulations to get his match against MJF with the whipping and everything. Jericho had his Labors of Jericho to get his match with his final match versus MJF at All Out, and so we've been having a Labors of Wardlow, and you know, so they're pretty much there. They've been devoting one of the 8 segments every week to this angle, to great effect too, as you point out. Wardlow's getting cheered. You could have the third segment could be a heat segment where Sean Spears gets his revenge and MJF beats the hell out of Wardlow. Right? They get the heat before the pay-per-view to give Wardlow revenge. How are they going to book that? Man, I don't know, because you want to let Wardlow out of his contract because, otherwise it's the same old story, right? It's either Wardlow disappears for a while, or they got to replay, you know, you got to do another match where Wardlow tries to get out of his contract with MJF. And so that would seem to logically favor Wardlow beating MJF. Do you want MJF, one of your top heels, doing jobs on 2 pay-per-views in a row since he just lost to Punk at Revolution, especially when MJF, I think that loss to Punk was to set up MJF winning the title later this year, maybe at Full Gear in November. Mm-hmm. And so that is a really good question of how do you book that? Fans want to see Wardlow win. I just go with it, but I don't know what Tony Khan's future plans are. You can always rehab MJF, having him get his win back and then going on another winning streak, right, to get him in title contention.
Yeah, you can. And like I said, I mean, you know, Wardlow's hot, and like that's a testament to him, and it is a testament to MJF too. Like, you know, they're dance partners here, and you know, you don't always get that kind of authentic run, and when it happens, you want to feed it. So yeah, I think you're looking at Wardlow going over, provided that this type of, you know, momentum continues. But how they do it will be interesting. I mean, I can see MJF bringing in like another bodyguard type figure to help him win that match, but you know, you do that though, and yeah, Wardlow's protected, okay, but does he lose a little bit of momentum? Yes. And also, you're coming out of that match then with the same story that you're in right now, which is Wardlow trying to get another shot at MJF, and so that's pretty repetitive. So yeah, they could play that card, but I don't know that I see that happening. Ryan, hopefully we answered your question. Back to you for question number 2.
Question number 2 is on Jeff Hardy. He has this big match against Darby. I was able to see Jeff Hardy over the weekend compete for a local independent show, and he won the tag team titles with his brother at that show. And what I noticed was there with a little bit more females there than usual, and I've heard that AEW's been pretty good with the females, like their female audience has been upset. Do you think the reason why is because Jeff Hardy's been featured on AEW?
What do you think, Eric?
I mean, there was certainly a huge pop for the Hardys when they came out tonight, right? Hot crowd at the start of that match. Jeff Hardy, I think, I haven't crunched the numbers, but I would guess he's a proven ratings draw. Tony Khan tends to not put people in position where he thinks he's going to lose ratings. And as we've all seen, one of AEW Dynamite's booking patterns is they like to put a big brand name star, CM Punk, Chris Jericho, over the first 2.5 years of the promotion have most often been in that spot. Sometimes it was Cody. They want a big star in that first segment to try and draw viewers in and keep them, right? And Jeff Hardy was in that role this week, so that was very interesting to see. I think, I think Hardy is proven to be an asset, even if he's sort of got that albatross of a spent, totally spent brother, Matt, who I'm not into at all, with him. And I think we're, my guess is Darby Allin goes over and Jeff Hardy puts him over because they sure seem on BTE and then this week on a little bit on Dynamite, they seem to be building toward a Hardy's Young Bucks match for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think that's how things are going to go too. And, I think just Jeff Hardy appeals to a lot of fans. I don't know that it's, a needle mover specifically with women, but I think he has shown that he does move it. And that's the important thing. I don't know that you can attribute Jeff Hardy alone to, the uptick in ratings with women, but a contributing factor likely. Back to you.
And final question for me is, I don't know if you noticed this at the bottom of the screen, I saw a cheeseburger and Bret Titus competed on the YouTube shows. Do you see them getting a shot on the main show? Because they were somewhat well-known names in Ring of Honor, and they've been featuring some of the Ring of Honor talent, like in the main event, like they did tonight. So is it possible they might go down the card and use these talents someday?
I don't see him as a main show guy right now, Bret Titus. Like, ROH guy, yes, somebody that Tony Khan should want to keep in that company, yes. But I just don't know that he's got the recognition or credibility from a championship point of view to be on those signature AEW shows. I mean, you think about it, like, there's signature AEW talent that doesn't make the cut for Dynamite on a weekly basis. And so, with that happening, I wouldn't be, replacing them further with Bret Titus. And it's nothing against him even as a performer. It's just, he's not in that position in that company. So I feel pretty confident saying no on that, but Eric, what about you?
I think I could see them, if Tony Khan gets a streaming show or a TV clearance or a just puts ROH on YouTube until he can get a TV clearance for it. I could see those two being part of the roster. They were part of the roster, obviously, in ROH before Tony Khan bought it. My guess is Tony Khan was just trying to get those two guys a paycheck because they're probably, their contracts with ROH expired possibly, at the end of last year, or if not the end of last year, certainly sometime this spring. And so he gets him a paycheck. And plus those matches were taped in Philly. I believe they were in Philly last week. So obviously a Ring of Honor stronghold, Philly, over the years. So providing a little, they were basically in to do jobs, on the Dark show on YouTube. I think Dark Elevation on Monday, cause I watched that one. And, jobbers with some personality or guys who were going to lose with personality and who the fans knew and could pop for and be happy that they were getting to see him again.
Yeah. Well said. Ryan, thank you very much. Always appreciate the call and the questions. Anything else for us?
The only thing I could really see Bret Titus doing is maybe have a match with Hook and then Hook getting a pretty easy victory since they need to feed him some people.
Yeah, yeah, like something like that I think could potentially work. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But thanks for taking the call.
Anything else,
I really appreciate it. That's it.
Yeah, appreciate you. Appreciate you making it, Ryan. Thank you, as always. Call again. We'll keep it rolling here, see if we can get everybody in. 705, you are up next. Thanks for holding. 705, state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, Zach. Hey, Eric. Hitting from London. How you guys doing?
Hey. Doing well, Hitting. Doing well. I thought that would – I almost, you know, shouted out the name – ahead of time because I was pretty sure, but I wasn't entirely sure. But great to talk to you. Glad you called. What did you think of Dynamite?
I thought it was a fine show. Yeah, you'll memorize my number one day, I think. I want to – there's a couple points I had in mind, which one sort of stems more from Rampage, but I'll stick to the show tonight. What did you think about the – Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa promo? I think Rosa is starting to veer into the territory of kind of where Edge is and a lot of other superstars I otherwise respect are, in that she's being a little too reactive to whether it's social media criticisms or, you know, podcast criticisms, whatever, and she's sort of weaving that into her promos. And when I saw the exchange with her and Deeb, a little too reactive at too many moments when talking, and it just doesn't – I don't think it sits well as a top babyface. And you know, the fact that she comes out, calls herself the best wrestler in the world when her only title defense, I think, was at an event which wasn't even seen by, you know, typical Dynamite audience, and wasn't even on pay-per-view. So I don't think she has that claim right now, and very rightfully, the storytelling with her of her feud with Britt Baker before she won the title, the heat for the story also seemed to peter down. So what do you make of Rosa's claims right now, as well as her just her general credibility as a women's champion, and also, as she claims, you know, really carrying women's wrestling forward?
Great topic. Yeah, boy, a lot to dig in there with her and that promo. And I guess I'll start off by saying in general, I think you want to leave that social media stuff out of your wrestling promos, because, you know, most people don't know what she's referencing there, you know, and for that reason alone, it falls on deaf ears and doesn't have the impact that she thinks it going to have, because people don't know what she's talking about. So that's number one. Coming out there and calling herself the best, you know, women's wrestler in the world, I have less of a problem with that, because I think that's how champions should carry themselves 9 times out of 10. I just think if you don't think that about yourself, no one else is going to. And so you have to be careful on how you articulate that. That's why being a babyface is difficult, because you have to walk that line successfully, and it's not easy to do. I don't think she's succeeded in that tonight, but I don't knock her for giving that a shot, because I think sometimes if you want to present a certain way, you just have to go ahead and present that way and tell people how they should view you. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't think it worked for her tonight. Maybe it will. Maybe it will in the long run. And as far as her run goes, she just needs more juice behind it. I think Serena Deeb will help in that regard. Not only will it give her a good match, but a notable opponent to beat. And I think it's a good match for her, Eric, at Double or Nothing. Not necessarily a signature title defense, but you know, an effective one as somebody that she can kind of check off the list. What do you make of Thunder Rosa, her promo tonight, and the match at Double or Nothing?
I guess, first of all, I agree. You know, it's kayfabe. It's suspension of disbelief. I want my champion coming out, slapping the belt, saying, I'm the best in the world, and this belt says so. I think the promo segment tonight was awkward. Rosa, I mean, clearly she speaks very good English, but I imagine it's her second language as a bilingual person. So, right, you know, it's not like Sheeta, who didn't speak a ton of English, and so they tried to do pre-tapes. Rosa has a lot of fire generally as a babyface when she's in the ring. I get a little bit less of that in her promos. They would have tonight's segment, I think, would have benefited if you had like a Tony Schiavone to mediate between the two and like actually ask questions instead of what Tony usually does, which is he introduces the person and then hands him the microphone and disappears. Like if you had an actual old school Jesse the Body Ventura in the middle of the ring mediating between the face and the heel in like, you know, mid to late 80s WWE, WWF, that would have worked a little better. You would have set them up to succeed by, you know, you when you're the interviewer in the ring, you can prod them to get to the next talking point, right? By the questions you ask, you can point them in that direction. And they didn't do that. They just had Rosa come out for no apparent reason on the stage to cut a promo, and then Deeb interrupted her and issued a challenge. And I think Hinton is absolutely right. Rosa was too reactive. She was agreeing with what her heel challenger said. And I think Rosa was hottest after that lights out match that she won. And it's been hard, you know, they didn't go to, you know, put the title on her then, right? Instead they put the title on Britt, and gave Britt a long run. And now, you know, Rosa, they tried to build it up, but, and they did sort of all the right things, right? With the Mercedes Martinez, attacked her, and then they were teaming together, and they painted by all the numbers you're supposed to paint. It just, Rosa just didn't feel as hot as maybe you would like your babyface woman champion. I think Deeb is a good challenger who nobody thinks she's going to win, but it's a good way to get a defense under Rosa's belt.
Yeah, and to your point about the title change, you know, they didn't even pay it off at Revolution either, where like it kind of it story like the. The rework story built up to that show, and I thought that in particular took the wind out of her sails again. I know you wanted to do the title change on a specific show, her hometown. I get that. But I think you slowed the momentum there with that pay-per-view loss. I looking back, you know, I don't want to put words in Tony Khan's mouth, but I bet he would redo that because I don't think they saw any kind of ratings lift or not a significant one anyway. And they really had to like jumpstart that feud again for a second time coming out of Revolution.
Yeah. I mean, you could have had Rosa win the belt at the pay-per-view and have Britt invoke a rematch clause and have Britt lose in her hometown, but then Britt has to do two jobs. And I imagine asking Britt Baker to do two jobs is probably like going to the dentist for Tony Khan, no pun intended.
Well said. Might not have gone over too well. Yeah. Hinton, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. First of all, she should say that she is the best in the world, even if it doesn't ring true. I think what I was trying to convey is it just didn't ring true, especially if I look at, you know, Serena Deeb, who I think is a better wrestler, better character, just a lot more composed than she is. But moving on from that, what have you made of this sequence of backstage promos we've had between Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Toni Storm and Ruby Soho? I think these have been really lame. I think this completely diminishes Britt Baker's star power. I think the way there's just something about the way that they're delivered that reminds me of old school WWE promos, and the fact that they lean into the, you know, all right, let's just talk over each other. There isn't really much substance there in, like, you know, feud between Toni Storm and Britt Baker. And I'm not really excited to see any of these women wrestle each other after this, and let alone the fact that, you know, Ruby Soho's character is harmed by just weeks upon weeks on Dark, and then she's like, she's part of the crew that breaks fight up backstage, which, you know, considering the pomp and circumstance with which she made her debut in AEW, as well as you know, the epic theme song, which is, you know, that's something that could be played on like a major show after a major title victory. I'm just not invested in either of these four women. What have you guys made of this little kerfuffle so far?
Well, Hinton, they're pre-tapes, I'm pretty sure. So perhaps if they felt – maybe that's the best version of it. I'm sure we're seeing the best version of it. So maybe that speaks to the talent involved there. No, I mean, Britt is you know, has a long track record of being good on the mic. I thought it was weird tonight that Toni Storm wasn't allowed to talk and that Ruby Riott was talking for her. You know, they felt a little repetitive over the few weeks, but, you know, I mean, on the plus side, at least they're putting them on TV to develop the story, even if they're only getting like a minute or less to get their angles over. We have not seen the women's bracket yet, but I would not be shocked, and maybe they've even said that that Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter will be wrestling each other. They certainly seem to have been leading down that path. I don't know if that's been made official yet. And then I would assume that Dr. Britt and Ruby Riott are going to also be, you know, those are going to be two of the matches. So that's why they're doing it, to diminishing returns maybe. Britt's felt a little flat since the title loss. She was off TV for a while. Then she had that bad, awful promo in Pittsburgh that was pretty much universally panned. You know, she's trying to figure out her character and her role when she doesn't have the belt, which is not at all uncommon in wrestling. Once you lose the belt after a long run on top, you gotta figure things out. See Kazuchika Okada a couple years ago after he lost the belt after his long title reign in New Japan. That guy was walking around ringside with balloons and he dyed his hair red. So it happens.
It does. I'm with you guys. I haven't liked these. To your point, Eric, to me, they are very repetitive. Like, I'm not even, you know, can't even really fully tell, like, where the first one ended and this one began. Like, it just kind of all blurred together. And I guess, you know, I don't want to say it waters down the tournament, but because of the content of these interactions just going nowhere, I think it just hurts the value of the tournament at this point, and it's not set in stone. They can get it back. I mean, the tournament hasn't even happened yet. But, you know, when you have those types of interactions where you're saying a lot of words but nothing's really said, no one is bringing up winning the tournament in a like real sport type way. It makes it a passing achievement and not central, which I think it should be at this point. And for that reason alone, I would pivot with these a bit. I don't think anybody comes out of these looking better than they did going in. But to Eric, to your point, like, it, you know, at least they're there, you know. And so a low bar to clear, but if that's how you're judging it, thumbs up. Otherwise, I don't see how you can give this a positive nod. Hinton, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's repetitive and it's very high school-y. And frankly, I thought Baker's feud with Soho itself was high school-y. So it just, I don't know why these guys can't just, you know, it's unscripted. Like, pitch some more compelling ideas, unless like 90s women's wrestling is like the only thing they ever saw, which I don't buy. So I don't know what's going on, but I don't know. We'll see. My final point I wanted to make was about the Malakai Black and Hollywood Blondes segment, which I found to be weird. It's, you know, last week we got the return of Penta and the Death Triangle reformed, and I'm like, okay, they're moving away from Fuego, who, I mean, if you watch Rampage, this guy's gotten beaten down week after week after week, and now Penta's like, all right, we were gathering our power for Phoenix to come back, and all right, Death Triangle comes in, but now we're relitigating the case involving the Hollywood Blondes. I keep forgetting their name, sorry. And so now we reinsert them after several weeks when I thought the feud was over. Like, when was the Hollywood Blondes not together? Like, I'm pretty sure I've seen Julia Hart coming to ringside several weeks on occasion. Sometimes she's in the turnbuckle, and they never really explain. I know she had the eye patch, but she still had the same kind of basic disposition, and now all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, our tag team was about to be broken up, and, you know, we need to beat up the House of Black in order to, you know, regain our stature or whatever, and they didn't even succeed in doing that. I mean, they had to be rescued by the Death Triangle. So what did you make of this entire spectacle that we saw tonight?
Yeah, it's Varsity Blondes, that you're not the Hollywood Blondes. Pillman and Austin.
Sorry.
Are not, not on the show. No, just kidding. this is an interesting one, Eric. I'll throw to you first on it if you have your thoughts ready to go.
I wrote the word awkward down in my notes three times. Awkward standoff, paid off, and they didn't really, right? Julia Hart couldn't, she was Hamlet, she couldn't decide whether to use the chair or not. I personally thought maybe this was not the week to run an angle where a guy is scaring a woman, given what's going on in our national politics this week. I'm sure that did not cross their mind and was not their intent. That's just me projecting my own view of the news onto wrestling. Malakai Black was so hot when he came in and was feuding with Cody. I thought, man, that guy could challenge for the world title. I mean, he could be a heel challenger who loses, but and he's just cold, right? That I don't think his trio has taken off. I hear Hinton's point about the Varsity Blondes. Pillman hasn't been around for a few weeks, maybe a month or in any kind of major role. Pillman and Griff Garrison were sort of, they had some promo where they were sniping at each other, right? And then Pillman stormed off, I think. But that was, I mean, that's 6 weeks ago, maybe?
That was weeks ago, yeah.
And so if you were going to, you need a last week on The Sopranos type little bit of a quick little video clip before they come out to remind people of when we last saw this group. And so this segment was a big fail for me tonight. And it's a shame because, you know, that they didn't pay off the Julia Hart thing. I guess they advanced it at least. The way this story had advanced in a month since she got misted was the little black around her eye got bigger every week. But that's about it. And she's been picking up wins on Dark lately, but and doing the cheerleading routine where she sort of waves at the crowd. So, this one's a mess. It's one of those situations where you need Tony Khan or one of the producers to step in and kind of provide a little more direction.
I don't mind the Julia Hart part of this because I think that they've slowly kind of been telling that story, but you know, pay it off. Like, I don't think you now need another layer of will she, won't she type thing. Like we've been there. We've seen that. We've seen that for weeks on end. Like since the miss, she's kind of in the corner. She's doing her thing, whatever, like go with it. Go or don't go, and I don't think it needed to be done in a like revived feud with the Varsity Blondes either. That team always felt like just like too low on the card for, you know, Malakai Black and his and that group in particular. When I think of him and Buddy Matthews and Brody King, it's like, like that's a trio that, you know, should be up there with, you know, Blackpool Combat Club. Like that could be a really interesting feud. But the Blondes, it's like, okay, you can have that little match and that angle to get Julia Hart on the path to join that faction. But this can't be like a signature story for Malakai Black. I mean, I think he has way too much equity and talent to be living in this place within the AEW ecosystem. Like it's just not a good use of them and him. And plus then you layer onto it just bad performances all around tonight. And I think that clearly hurt it too. So yeah, to me, it's like, I'm in the back right now going to Tony Khan saying, hey, like let's do this thing. Let's do this and move on to something else. Like get Julia Hart in the group and then, and go, Varsity Blondes go their way, House of Black goes their way, and you wrap it up. Anything else at this point, I think it's just going to make that.
Sorry, Zach and Hinton. Julia couldn't decide what to do tonight. We get 6 more weeks of winter.
No. Oh, gosh, Eric. Yeah, this is a mess is a good way to put it. Hinton, back to you. Anything else tonight, man?
Yeah, I would have had Julia just pull the trigger if you were going to bring out the Varsity Blondes anyway, which I wouldn't have done. But, you know, if I was working under Tony Khan, I'd say just pull the trigger because – and I'm not in favor of turning any woman on AEW heel because the babyface depth chart in the AEW women's roster is – I mean, it's very thin. It is dangerously thin right now. But, you know, I think it would have been a good challenge for Julia Hart to – you know, see what dimension she can explore, right? Something like Alexa Bliss, for example.
Yeah.
Except we don't need them and the magic of Alexa Bliss, but maybe just that kind of performance might have challenged her to, and she might have sold some merch. Who knows? Anyway, guys, I know you've got some callers lined up, so I will hang up here. It's great talking to you, Eric, as always, and Zach, great work with the YouTube channel.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks, Hinton. Thanks for calling. Talk to you soon. Yeah, if you guys want to check us out on YouTube, we relaunched the Torch YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube, new content every single day from myself, from Tyler Sage, from Wade. Robert Vallejos just dropped a new series on YouTube. So, you know, give us a try. Like some stuff. Subscribe would be a really big help. And we certainly hope that we keep you busy with the content here moving forward with some new shows going up in the next few weeks as well.
Tyler Sage is giving Hook a run for his money on the hairdo. Let me just say.
He is. He really is. Boy, yes, we need to make sure to bring that up to him on the next, you know, Torch staff meeting or something because, yeah, it's getting pretty epic, I'd say. Let's keep it rolling here, Eric. 217, thank you for holding. You are up, and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Larry. I'm calling from Beardstown, Illinois. We're about 45 miles away from state capital Springfield, Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln country, you could say.
Very and good, Larry. Great to hear from you.
Yeah, it's been a little bit since I've called in, but I watched Dynamite tonight, and I thought it was a good show overall, but there were a couple things I just kind of watched and tilted my head and said, what in the hell? One of the things was this, the Varsity Blondes, House of Black, Julia Hart thing. I don't think they've made the Varsity Blondes out to look very good at all in this entire situation, first off, and I think they've dragged the Mist in the Eye thing out way too long. And tonight was a real cluster. You know, the Pillman and Garrison come out and call out the House of Black. You know it's 2-on-3. You know they're going to get their clocks cleaned. And until the end of Pillman talking, it seemed like the crowd was pretty disinterested and wasn't caring. And then the House of Black comes out and lays waste to the Varsity Blondes like you thought they would. And then the thing with Julia Hart happened, and at that point I think you'd have to pull the trigger one way or another, have her join the House of Black or snap as long as and fight them, because it's dragged on this long, and the way she's acted in recent weeks has been a very strong shadowing toward her joining the House of Black. And the whole thing was really strange, and then they go to commercial, and then they come back, and she's just standing there in the ring, and then, you know, after about 30 seconds, she just gets out and leaves. And did any of that make any sense to either of you?
Eric?
Yeah, I mean, we went over that with Hinton. No. My guess, Pillman was gone for about 18 days last month. Between matches in AEW, according to Cage Match. I think I remember him posting a tweet or an Instagram post that he was moving back to Cincinnati from where he was living in Florida. So seems like he might have been taking care of some business, and so that made – it was already dragging out too long before then, and this made it drag out even further. It, you know, it, there's at least a possibility maybe everybody wasn't available to do the angle. I think, yeah, it's bad. It was awkward. It was one of the weakest parts of the show tonight. Didn't seem like they had mapped it out too well. Awkward transitions, awkward staring. And, you know, they were waiting for somebody to make a move. There was like this standoff, and it's like, God, we're dying here. Is somebody going to make a move? I guess I'm generally, other than the, I don't have a problem with the Varsity Blondes as a unit being used to put over Malachi Black's group. That seems like an appropriate use of Philman and Griff Garrison, and moving Julia Hart to the heel group. That all seems fine. They just, you know, they didn't pull the trigger tonight. If they were going to do it, they didn't do it. Time to get off the clock.
Yeah, no, right. That's where I'm at with it too. It's like, you know, just get there. I mean, this is not a Wade wrote in his report tonight, if that was a dress rehearsal, I'd either cut the segment entirely or at least shorten it by half. Nobody is at all concerned with whether Pillman keeps the Varsity Blondes together. And I think that's the hook. I mean, this is about not the hook is the wrong word, but that's the crux of the point. Like, the story here is what happens with House of Black. I think that's where people care most. Like, Julia Hart's going to join that group. That matters. It doesn't really matter whether or not the Varsity Blondes stay together. Like, just, you know, they're just not that presented in a way that's going to elicit that type of reaction. So, you know, get there. You have to get there. It's been far too long. And like I said before, with him, you know, on top of it all, I don't think the performances were very good tonight either. Larry, back to you for your second point that you wanted to make.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to really briefly point out that the crowd was cheering Hart to hit Garrison, which shows you what they think of the Hollywood Blondes. But second point was what you talked about earlier about the Ring of Honor unification match, how it just seemed like, well, all of a sudden we slapped it up there, and, oh, it's going to be our main event tonight. And I think if I had any say in it, I would have started a build-up a couple of weeks ago and then maybe the week before run a video explaining, you know, Mercedes Martinez's a little bit of her background and explaining, you know, how she came to be a champion. And same with Peraza, a little bit of that, explain how she became a champion, why she didn't even care. You know, you can even bring up, you know, this happened at the Super Card of Honor show, which ROH promoted. And with our cross promotion with ROH, we're going to bring you this great title unification match, and we're going to have it on tonight, you know, things like that. And they didn't do that. They just expected everyone watching to know why we should care or who they are, or why should we should care about Peraza or Martinez. And as a longtime fan and occasional watcher of ROH and occasional watcher of Impact, I knew who they were, but not every AEW fan knows who they are, and not every fan in general, casual observer, is going to say, hey, oh my gosh, it's going to be a great match between these two champions from Ring of Honor. It's like, who are these two and why are they in the main event? But that's just my take on it. I didn't know if you necessarily agreed with that or not.
Yeah, we talked about the opening segment. We agreed. I did look up on Cage Match when Mercedes Martinez's last match was before tonight. And it was that pay-per-view on April 1st against Willow Nightingale, so when she won the interim title. So she's off TV for more than 30 days. Maybe they mentioned it in the Dynamite after the pay-per-view, the ROH pay-per-view. But, throw out a match cold with two people that the fans, many, if not most of the fans, don't really know who they are, don't really have a reason to boo or cheer, and you get the result, a no heat, not much time to have the match thing that just fell flat with an otherwise hot crowd.
Yep, that's it. Well said. Larry, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, call again, man. We got an email on this too, Eric, so I'll hit this now, from John in Tennessee. He says, this Ring of Honor stuff has to go. If I wanted to watch ROH title matches, I would have done so when they had a TV show. I haven't been impressed by any of the talent, and they are just taking time away from AEW wrestlers that were already fighting for TV time. Getting the video library was a good move, but everything else has been a mistake. This crowd was dead for the main event. What is the end game for the ROH brand? Everyone go VIP. Thank you, John. PWTorch.com/go VIP. Yeah, I mean, we hit a lot of this, but I think it's to me, it is important to discuss just because of how prevalent it, the Ring of Honor, those letters are on AEW television right now. You know, we don't need to beat this further, Eric, but that company needs context within AEW, period. And I think from a business perspective, it makes sense. And also for running out a better show, it makes sense as well.
Yeah, just a sentence or two.
Yep.
Tony Schiavone reading it from Tony. I mean, the ship has sort of sailed on that, right? Because they should have done it at the start, and they haven't, and so here we are. But you could still have Excalibur or Schiavone, probably not JR, slip in a sentence or two and just explain it and just answer the burning question. Now, I think I raised this point on Twitter within the last week or two, and the AEW stands got on my case a little bit, saying, no, everyone knows what ROH is. There's no problem here. And, you know, I disagree with that. I think obviously you do as well from your comments. This thought hadn't occurred to me until we were discussing this tonight. Is it possible that in addition to wanting to preserve the brand and keep the brand alive in fans' minds so it's not completely cold until you can get distribution on a TV show, is it possible that Tony's putting matches on there because he thinks, you know, ROH had, I think, you know, it wasn't it was sort of a syndicated show, right? It didn't air at the same time
right
everywhere. It aired in different times in different Sinclair TV stations in different markets. And I think WrestleNomics reported, had a guest on within the last 6 months who said there were about 400,000 people who watched the show a week. I think that was according to Sinclair. On all of their, all their various stations combined, added up to 400,000 viewers a week. Is it possible Tony thinks maybe he can get some of those viewers to watch his show? I think if you watched ROH, especially at the end, you probably watch AEW. It's got to be an overlapping Venn diagram circles, but is that a possibility? Tony Khan thinks it could help with the ratings?
I mean, it's a possibility, yes, for sure. I think it would be, you know, I think it's a misguided strategy because of the point that you just made. I mean, I think it goes the other way. Like, can you get AEW viewers to watch Ring of Honor now, not, hey, let's gobble up these Ring of Honor viewers that are there? Because, yeah, I don't have any math or reporting on this right now, but my presumption is that many Ring of Honor viewers also dabbled with the AEW product. And so you're fishing in a really, really small pond. If that's what he's doing. But even still, like, it's like, okay, have those matches, but just, you know, put the proper story in place behind him. Give them a reason. Like, make those ROH fans who tune in go, yeah, I've been with this product from the very beginning, and here's why. That's a great video package of the history of the whatever, the women's title or the TV title or what have you, or just the company in general. Like, I don't think that hurts anything. I really don't. I think it just helps for the Ring of Honor diehards and for the folks that are watching AEW that have no idea, you know, what or who Ring of Honor is. Like, I mean, I think of it like this. Like, you know, when you tell stories in AEW about, like, the AEW stars and their titles, and, like, there's video packages about them. There's hype, there's sizzle, there's promotion. Like, you wouldn't have Tony Khan would not take that out of his show and the comment then be, well, everybody knows, you know, what's happening on the show because they watch it. Like, it's like, no, that's not how it works. It makes that type of stuff makes the show better. It's pro wrestling. It's built on hype and intrigue. And so you have to have that for things to resonate in a strong way, whether people know it or not. It makes your product better, in my opinion. Okay, we're going to keep it going here with callers, guys. See how many more we can swing, get in here before we wrap things up. Taking a look at the switchboard, 781, you've been holding for a long time. Thanks so much for that. But it is your turn. You're up. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, it's Brian in Boston. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Brian. Good. What did you think of the show?
It wasn't great. I mean, I give it a slight thumbs up, but it was not one of the better shows I've seen. I mean, the first hour was good, but the second hour, not so good. I'm about to go into a major diatribe on the main event in a moment, but the whole House of Black segment, I fast-forwarded through most of that because I taped it on my DVR. I really didn't care. That didn't need to be on the show. You could have taken that off and given the main event more time. And I'm really just going to make my only point about the main event because I have a lot to say about it, but I'll try to keep it contained. That match sucked. It was terrible between Perrazzo and Martinez. Both women deserve better than that. And whoever was booking this, whether it was Khan or someone else, they didn't leave enough time for it. They only left about 10 minutes, half of which was filled with a commercial break, which was dumb. And it was just slow-moving. And I've seen Deonna Purrazzo wrestle many times in Impact, and her matches are always great. She's better than most of the women on the AEW roster. And they just showed her very poorly, and it was slow-moving, clunky, and they didn't get the time they needed. And I didn't like the finish. I mean, I understand, she's not contracted to AEW, and and she's with Impact, but her contract does expire in a couple of months, and Kenny Omega already screwed things up by bamboozling Tony Khan into not signing her when she was available initially, I think in early 2020, and I think they should sign her. And is it really too much to ask that maybe they work out like some kind of deal where she works a few dates, and just holds on to it a little longer, or better yet, have her drop the title to someone who could actually benefit from it, not Mercedes Martinez, who's well past her prime, in her 40s, has no personality whatsoever, and hasn't really been built on the show very well. I'm not a fan of hers at all. She's a solid wrestler, I just think they could have had her drop it to someone who could benefit. Like, I don't know, Jamie Hayter, just literally anyone else. Anyway, I just wanted to know what your guys' thoughts were on it.
Yeah, I was higher on the match than you were. I say that without having very high expectations for it either, because you're looking at the clock, you're seeing that they're going to get 10 minutes, and it's like, okay. So you kind of knew what it was going to be. I know Perrazzo is contracted to Impact Wrestling right now. I thought there was a chance she would still win this title, and maybe that there was some business on the table for her and Tony Khan down the road coming out of it. So I think the ending was a bit surprising. The match was fine. I think you're being a little hard on it, but ultimately though, there's a lot of balls in the air with this type of thing, because you gotta put that title around somebody that's going to be around Ring of Honor and that's going to have the availability to do that. So that's at play, and maybe you don't want necessarily Jamie Hayter or Toni Storm or any of your top AEW women to win that title, because that's,
you could just buy out
the Ring of Honor. Well, yeah, but it's just like, you got to put it on somebody that is available and that can kind of make the belt something, maybe somebody that deserves it. She's been around a really long time. So I don't know, Eric, what do you think? I think the decision to go with her is more of a, a means to an end rather than like, hey, we're going with Mercedes Martinez here. This is more of like, hey, okay, she's available. It makes sense. We could probably get something out of it in the end. Okay, let's do this piece. We have to do something. That was my kind of feeling on it, more so than Tony Khan is, you know, attaching his wagon to Mercedes Martinez.
Yeah, I mean, I think in all of the and with all of the ROH belts, Tony Khan at the pay-per-view and then tonight took the belts off the person he didn't have under contract and put it on somebody that he did have under contract. Or I guess in the case of Gresham, I don't know if he signed an AEW contract or not.
He did.
Okay, so it's a clean sweep then for all those belts. And so if Deonna had been available to work that show that night, I think she would have, but I think she was booked elsewhere that night.
She was on the Impact show that was the same night.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So she was booked elsewhere, so she couldn't make it. So you could have just, you could have just done it another time, I guess, did not create an interim champion. That's what they did. And here we were. I thought it was interesting that Impact, you know, W. Morrissey's fairly protected in Impact, as far as I know. He's not jobbing every week. And then Deonna Purrazzo's not jobbing every week either, and they both took L on national television tonight on a show that probably is going to draw, if they're lucky, 900,000 viewers. And, you know, a lot more people are going to see that than see them every week on Impact, you know, by possibly a ninefold rate. And so you do... You know, I don't know what Tony Khan is giving Impact in return. I mean, to get Deonna, who's under contract, as Brian points out, he probably had to give Impact something, whether it was cash considerations or I will send the star over to help, you know, to main event one of your shows or TV shows or pay-per-views or whatever. But I assume Morrissey under contract as well to Impact? I would have thought so.
Yeah, he's not. He's on a paper appearance. So he hasn't actually signed a deal with Impact.
Yeah, I mean, Impact probably still wants to know that they're okay. You're coming and you're going to book them to do jobs. Okay, you would want something for that, I think, if you got a brain in your head. So I'm interested to see how that will shake out. I can't watch Impact because I don't get. Whatever station access on my cable Comcast package, but would like to see how it shakes out. Does Tony do something in return for them?
Yeah. I think you guys are on point there. Brian, anything else for us tonight before we kind of kick the can down the road and get to some other callers?
Sure. I just feel like I should point out that Khan could have had Purrazzo 2 years ago if he hadn't let that moron Kenny Omega talk him out of it, which I'm sure is what happened. But anyway, just because Omega, great wrestler, not a good booker at all. But anyway, just to hit on the other women's part of it, and then I'll hang up. I thought Hinton was right on about the exchange between Deeb and Rosa. It was kind of ruined by the fact that Rosa was responding to like every sentence Deeb said, like saying yes or I agree or something. Don't do that. I don't know if that was her idea or something, but it'd be dumb and lazy, and it doesn't make you look good as a talker. I'm just wondering what your guys' opinion of do you see Tony Storm and Britt Baker in the finals of the Owen Hart thing? And just do you see Tony Storm being the one to end Cargill's undefeated streak and take the TBS title? Anyway, just a longer booking question. Anyway, thanks for taking the call. I'll let you guys move on.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Great stuff. Appreciate the call. Where do you see that going, Eric? I mean, we don't have brackets for the women's.
Yeah, I need to see a bracket first. That seems like as good a final as any, right? Tony Storm is a tremendous talent. I don't know that she's really gotten to show it in AEW so far, but I assumed her coming out party in AEW was going to be this tournament and that she was going to win it. I don't think Britt needs to win it to maintain her heat. She's Britt Baker. She's going to be a top star in that women's division no matter what. So yeah, let's see where the what the brackets hold. Will Toni Storm be the one to end Jade Cargill's streak? I think if Toni Storm, it's possible. Toni Storm got hot enough, and they could build that feud. Sure, why not?
Yeah, Toni Storm winning the One Heart tournament, I think, is a great way to kind of introduce her officially to the show and to the AEW audience. Like, it just, I think she'll be able to show what she can do. She can have some good matches with some good opponents, and it gives her a signature win, and a meaningful one, hopefully, to talk about. I don't think you can rule out Britt Baker, just because if Tony Khan is trying to establish this tournament as something that really that matters and means something, you know, maybe you do at that point want to give the win to the biggest star that you have. That would be Britt Baker in this case, but I'm certainly not advocating that. I'm just calling that out as it could be a potential possibility. Can Toni Storm end Jade Cargill's undefeated streak? Eric, yeah, I'm with you. Like, absolutely, she can. She needs to get a lot hotter to do it. And until she does, or anybody for that matter does, I wouldn't be ending that undefeated streak just to end it. I think Cargill is and has been tapping into something that grows and gets stronger week to week. Unless you have a good reason to end that, I wouldn't be, Eric.
Yeah. It's weird because I know it's been noted on Torch podcasts in recent weeks that AEW can really only seem to book one women's program strong at a time. And so Rosa has been overshadowed by Jade Cargill's rise and her winning streak. And now they built that up with the Marina Shafir match. They paid that off last week. So now we're getting, Rosa's getting built up for the pay-per-view. So, that's the bandwidth they have or are choosing to expend. And so that's where we're at. You're either being focused on, or you're kind of on the back burner with like a little promo every week, which is where Jade finds herself now.
Yep. Yep. Well said. Okay. We'll continue on down the line here, 419. And then we'll get to Javier after that, for a bit to wrap things up. 419, you are up. Thank you so much for holding. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
This is Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig, what's going on? Great to talk to you, man. It's been a bit.
Hey, what's up, Zach? What's up, Nick? I'll make this very quick. I got three really short points, or questions, actually. What do you think the stipulations are going to be in that MJF Wardlow match? I really want Wardlow to try to get some entrance music. War Pigs has been speculated, and I'm at the top of the speculation list. I want that song so bad. What do you guys think are they going to be the stipulations in the contract?
Good question, man. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think something. One thing that I think I'm pretty certain on is that there'll be some sort of stipulation that if MJF wins, Wardlow is, you know, forever attached to MJF, whether he likes him or not. I think that will be there in some form or fashion. But yeah, nothing else is striking me at the moment. Eric, what do you think? Anything on your mind as far as where they could go? I mean, they've done this kind of, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Eric, they've done this shtick with MJF before. And so it'll be, you know, tough to keep it fresh feud after feud after feud, but Wardlow certainly is a different kind of opponent because they have a really long long history, and the idea here that Wardlow is under contract to MJF. So a lot of like different nuance to play off of, but what do you think?
Under the let me get my stuff in Brian Cage school of thought, one of my notes is that with Morrissey wrestling tonight, it really feels like Tony Khan should have licensed We Hate It When Our Friends Become Successful, one of Morrissey's signature songs that would have been apt for tonight. That's probably a deep cut for most of the audience, I realize. The stipulations, my guess is one of them, you got to beat Sean Spears, would be mm-hmm. make perfect sense. And then maybe you'll quit wrestling if you lose, right? You'll stop showing up. That's a possibility. And then I would imagine one of the stipulations will be kind of a under the personal humility type thing. You've got to kiss that ring MJF has won a couple of years in a row, or you have to apologize to me and say you suck. You know, some eating type of deal for Wardlow, where he has to, you know, bend his knee and humiliate himself for MJF's gratification. You know, based on what's logical and what we've seen before and what hasn't been done yet, the Spears thing.
Yeah, that works. I mean, I think that works for me. Craig, what did you have anything else on your mind as a potential avenues to go on this?
They got a lot of avenues they could go down, because all that stuff is fine, but it's all been done. And I think they're going to try to pull out some stops. We'll see. I just hope that Wardlow goes, all right, I'll agree to all your stipulations, but I get music. And it's it's freaking War Pigs.
Yeah.
They really hinted at that a lot last week.
Yeah, and they've been playing with that name quite a bit too, yeah.
Yeah. Number two is, did you guys see the, because you guys are busy during the commercials, did you guys see the Tony Khan commercial with the Asian heritage?
I did.
Did you guys, what did you guys think of that?
It was good, but they cut him off at the end. He was in the middle of a sentence, and they went to the kicker or whatever. He didn't get to finish the sentence.
Oh wow!
I thought the whole thing.
I'm pretty sure I saw the whole thing too. What were you watching on?
I have Xfinity.
Okay, I was on YouTube TV. I think I got the whole thing anyway. It didn't stand out. Yeah, I thought it was.
I thought it was nice,
Craig. I thought it was good. I thought it was, you know, Tony Khan is a well spoken guy, and you know, I think he's, you know, authentic and genuine, and you know, that's both in wrestling and, you know, when he does stuff like that. So I thought that played well. Eric, I'm assuming you agree.
Yeah, no, Tony did well. He put over his talent, and he talked about how people of Asian Pacific Islander descent have normally been portrayed as the bad guys or gals on pro wrestling, right? U.S. pro wrestling, and talked about how he was trying to correct that a little bit. So I thought that was a interesting observation and a good point to make.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, good. Good catch there to bring that up, Greg. That's I forgot about that.
And lastly, NJPW was not mentioned at all tonight. Which
they were mentioned
was
once.
Weird. Oh, was it? I didn't. I must have missed it.
Well, yeah, but not. Yeah, but if you blinked, you missed it. When Wheeler Yuta came out, they mentioned he was going over for the Best of the Super Juniors tournament this month.
Okay.
Later this month.
I just thought it was crazy how that was the big announcement last week and nothing. I mean, except for that, well, I guess. This week.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
They gotta get past I imagine it's gonna continue. They gotta get past Double or Nothing before they can turn to promote the next pay per view, I would think. I don't remember if they plugged
they did, yeah.
On sale dates. Yeah, in 11 hours, I got to be on Ticketmaster trying to use all the pre-sale codes to try and score some tickets.
Yeah,
are you guys
they
both
did.
Going?
Yes, I hope to be, for sure. Yep.
Yeah,
right,
for
I'm
going to
try to see you guys there.
If I got to buy a scalp seat or if I get score regular, I'm for sure going.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, Craig, come on in. Come on into town.
Absolutely. All right, thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right. Yeah, Craig, thanks for making it. Talk soon.
Yeah.
All right, we'll wrap up here with Javier. Javier, hello. I'm going to play your jingle here and hopefully not take us off the air.
Down to Miami, talking to Javier.
There we go. Everything's still lit up on the board, so this is good. Javier, how you doing?
Hey, Zach. Glad you sound better. Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Hey, pretty well. Nice to hear you. And you putting yourself over, I guess you didn't put yourself over. Zach put you over with your own theme song. Applause.
Yeah. So I got my own little thing going on now. So Eric, I will co-sign everything you said on Hangman Page. It's promo. Everything you said about that I think it you're right that they're tinging him as a heel just because they know that CM Punk is going to get the majority of the cheers. Whether they keep him heel would be a decision they will make after that. So. Speaking of wrestlers kind of like disappearing for a while, JR mentioned during the, House of Black match, he mentioned that he said, we don't talk enough about Brody King, and I looked it up, JR's only called 4 shows with Brody King, and Brody King hasn't wrestled on one of the shows he's called since Revolution on March 6th.
Wow, really? Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mean to cut you off there, Javier, but it's stuff like that where you're like, okay. I answered the Red Titus question from Ryan earlier, and it's like, yeah, you could put Red Titus on the show, but, you have all sorts of talent that you have under AEW contract that aren't making it. Like, good guests for the company in Brody King and others, but that's a pretty stunning fact. Eric, I don't know. I just feel like the House of Black in particular needs to be more prevalent on your television, and Brody King is a part of that. I mean, that can be a top faction if you want it to be.
Yeah, and they're on TV just about every week, but more than half the time, I'm venturing to guess, if you were to look it up, it's in a promo, like some sort of pre-tape in,
yeah,
Satan's cave with bad lighting, where they're doing their mystical WWE style,
right,
stuff that, I guess to me the interesting part is, it came out after Malachi Black was let go that, he would pinch these ideas to Vince and the writers, and they'd just sort of look at him like he was crazy or, didn't know what he was talking about. And I'm guessing he has more freedom in AEW, and so he was hot when he came in with Cody, as I mentioned earlier in the show, and he's been kind of cold ever since. And since he got out of that program, which would have been at Full Gear, right? I think they had a tag match. That was sort of the blow off that with Pac and Cody, I think, against Andrade and Malachi Black. And that's 5-6 months ago. And it's not clicking. It's not working. How much of that is because they haven't really put him? Phoenix broke his arm, right? Dislocated his elbow, right? So maybe. Mm-hmm. Circumstances beyond their control. They had a pivot to this goofy Pillman, Griff Garrison, Julia Hart thing to fill time while they waited for Ray to heal up. And now they're ready to start paying that off, presumably with a really, really insanely hot 6-man tag whenever it takes place.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that you're right. They're not on the show. They're just not in the ring. And I don't know. I just think that's a pretty cool group, and it's a unique group compared to other, factions on the show. And so I'd just be leaning into that more than they are, I guess. Javier, back to you.
Yeah. The, one of the things I have is, I loved Morrissey shutting down the crowd when they went into the, we want
yes,
Enzo.
Yes.
No, we don't dueling thing. I'm totally, on Morrissey's bandwagon with that. Because I just love the fact that this is about me, and you're basically disrespecting me is the pretty much the gist of what he said there. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
That was really good. I thought it worked honestly, on multiple levels. Like, one, yeah, for Morrissey to kind of just prove his point and kind of like stake his claim that, hey, I'm the guy that's here and the guy that matters now. I also think that it like worked well, like at that moment for the match, because the audience could have taken that a lot of different directions, and like he kind of squashed it all with that reaction. So I thought that helped, you know, the match itself, and it helped the Wardlow story kind of get shined in the proper light too. So I thought that was really a highlight moment of the show, Eric.
I don't know. I'm surprised the nitpickers haven't said that we needed a 3-minute Life and Times of Morris W. Morrissey package before the match took place to center us on who Morrissey was. I think he only needed to look like a badass, a really huge badass tonight, and he totally did. It was part of a trend of the mat action not being that great on the show outside of the Blackpool Combat Club 6-man and the Phoenix Dante Martin match. I didn't think a lot of the rest of it stood out to me as mm-hmm. super good, which is weird because AEW usually does provide one thing, and it's hot action, you know, for 2 hours for the most part. And they didn't really do that tonight. They had good action, a couple of, you know, a lot of average by their standards action. So I probably wasn't as high on Wardlow and Morrissey as most, I would guess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But yeah, it was a good night in the ring.
The crowd liked it, so it doesn't really matter, right? As you said,
right. Well,
it didn't need to be a Matt classic.
Exactly. Yep. Javier. Well, real quick on the Blackpool Combat Club, like that, and I want both of your guys' takes on this, but that thing is going to get like hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. And, you know, I just like, where would you take that, Eric? Like if you're booking it out, like how do you get the most out of the momentum that group has and will continue to have as they continue to grow and build? Like where can you take, you know, a hot faction like that?
I mean, I think, in the short term, the 6-man version of it is going to go away because Yuta is going to the Best of the Super Juniors tournament.
Oh, true. Yep.
In the
yep.
middle of the month. If I had to guess at the pay-per-view, they're two of AEW's biggest stars, Mox and Danielson. They will be slotted one of two places: in a tag title match against Jurassic Express, in which they will just steamroller them. Or should, or they will be the missing two that help Eddie Kingston and Santana and Ortiz against the Jericho Appreciation Society, depending on who they have slated for that role and when they want to put the tag belts on the Blackpool Combat Club. Javier, agree, disagree? Other things they could do?
Yeah, I agree, and I'll also add FTR for the ROH titles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, good one. Yep. Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch them book that out because they're just so likable right now. Even though they're just kind of just beating the pulp out of their opponents, there's a likability factor with all three and with Regal. And I thought the video that they released on social media yesterday with Regal kind of like talking in the background and showing the guys training was just a really just great piece of work. I'm glad that they aired it on Dynamite tonight, because it's like, it's that kind of thing that I think Dynamite needs. You got to have that good work on your biggest show and not just, you know, on social media. So that was good to see tonight. But exciting time for that trio. Javier, anything else for us tonight, man?
Well, and for Moxley, I'm thinking that for the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, I'm looking at either Jay White or Okada for the title as the main event. So I think that, you know, there's going to be more stuff with Moxley in respect to that. I did want to bring up for the people who, you know, who are like, you know, the Yuta fans, Over in the best, when he goes over to the best super juniors, he's going to be there from his first match is going to be against Robbie Eagles. So he'll be wrestling Robbie Eagles, Doki. He'll be main eventing on the 22nd against El Desperado. Then he'll be wrestling Bushi, Titan, El Linderman, Master Wado, El Fantasma, and then finishing off with TJP. I think that for AEW, I think they'd like him to get at least 8 points because that would be a solid, you know, showing for you know, someone, you know, of his stature. Anything above that would be gravy, unless they're going to tell the story of someone who's like, you know, a newbie, basically, and then, you know, he'll have just one victory, but it'll be like a big victory that like, on the second to last night, El Fantasma, he could, you know, like an upset for El Fantasma, that sort of thing. But I would expect him to get like around 8 points, which would be 4 victories. So, yeah, so that would be Yuta's, his path on that. So, I am looking forward to that.
I am too. I think that's if you're on the fence about whether or not you wanted to, make the commitment to watch the best super juniors, Wheeler Yuta's involvement, I think, is really intriguing. I'm with you, Javier. I expect him to have a good showing. I don't think he's going to take the, you know, he's not going to get the win, but I think he's going to have a good showing. And I think you might see, you know, his potential Forbidden Door opponent, like, kind of linger around him during his run there. You may get some hints as to who that might be during the Super Junior tournament too. So yeah, that's a drawing card for me for sure. Eric, are you a best of Super Juniors guy? Are you gonna watch?
Well, I didn't watch last year because it just was the same old.
I've
watched in years past. I enjoyed it, and so I'm looking forward to this year. As far as Wheeler Yuta goes, I think he's going to be the sort of Zack Sabre Jr. of that whole tournament because he's not a high flyer like just about everybody else in the tournament.
Right.
So he's going to be having some more mat-based wrestling, I think, which will be a nice change of pace from all of the endless high spots and depending on how much time they have, either not selling them long enough or selling them long enough, I suppose, depending when you get later in the card, they'll have more time to sell.
Yeah. Yep. Javier, back to you.
And you guys speculated on the Joker. I'd also throw in Tomohiro Ishii into that spot too.
Mm. Oh man, that would be fun. Ishii versus Joe. Yeah. Can't rule it out at all. And it would make sense because of the crossover.
Next Wednesday is the 11th, and the next New Japan pay-per-view is from DC on the 14th, and then they're taping TV in Philly on the 15th. So, yeah, he could be in the country.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so
on the
14th,
he's wrestling Kingston.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah, boy, that would be a fun match, too. You know, Ishii Joe, that's good stuff.
Yeah, if Ishii really, like, brings it, because, you know, sometimes, you know, they'll be in exhibition mode, as I call it, which is just, you know, basically go through the, go through the signatures and that's about
it. The 10-man tag mode, yep.
Yeah, so... I
watched the show... Tanahashi won over the weekend, right? Over Ishii?
Yes.
U.S. title match, semi-main?
Yes.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, he has the title. The main... I don't know if it's the main event or not, but Tanahashi, Juice, Ospreay, and Moxley are having a four-way for the U.S. title.
Oh, yeah.
So, Juice, who... Mm-hmm. Yeah, Juice, who recently just joined Bullet Club. The other AEW, because I mean Capital Collision, which is the name of the pay-per-view that's going to be the New Japan one, is pretty much like an early Forbidden Door because Tomohiro Ishii is wrestling Eddie Kingston. Brody King is going to be wrestling Minoru Suzuki. And Jay White's teaming up with Hikuleo against Beretta, who's teaming up with Okada. So we got Beretta from Best Friends. We have Brody King from House of Black, and then we have Eddie Kingston. So as well as John Moxley. Yep. The matches so far, it looks like it's been announced. So.
They're setting the table. They're setting the table. That's for sure. All right, Javier, any final notes for us today, man? We're gonna my voice is gone.
Yeah, I gotta wake up. I gotta wake up for work in 4 hours. So.
Oh my. Okay. Yeah. Then you have every.
Yeah. So. But last thing, did you guys miss Sammy Guevara and Tay Conti? They would really like to know since they've been tweeting that out.
Eric, were you pining for Sammy and Tay tonight?
As if it weren't bad enough that I have to see that, at least they're heels now, but if it wasn't bad enough that I had to see them on Dynamite every week, I had to watch them Saturday night on the Triple A pay-per-view. So, I'm about done with them. But at least they're properly positioned where I can boo them and it's the appropriate reaction.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I mean, now that they're properly positioned, I'm okay with seeing them. And I hope they, you know, get something out of it. Like, I really hope that this can, it needs to be presented less cutesy, annoying heel heat and like more like, okay, yes, they're together, but Sammy Guevara is still a dangerous heel who could win matches, but you know, they have to find that. But if they can, I think it's something that can go somewhere. It's a long way away from that, but it's better for me now that they're not cast as baby faces. That changes the game. But did I miss him though, Javier? No, I did not miss him.
I hope Sammy takes a long time off TV to heal his injury. Yep.
Yes, right.
I actually miss Dan Lambert, to be honest. that's what I've been missing.
You and only you.
All right. So that's pretty much all I had. So, Eric, good luck getting your hands on tickets, you bastard.
Thank you. It's really a shame. I just didn't get to go to a New Japan show in suburban Chicago last month. I'm so deprived of these great big shows.
Yeah. Yeah, we never get anything here in Chicago ever. So, yeah.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
All right, Javier. Yeah, you too, man. Thanks for calling. Good stuff. You can check out Javier's work every week or often at pwtorch.com. He does the pay-per-view primers ahead of WWE pay-per-views and AEW pay-per-views, and is also the host of the New Japan Pride podcast, as you can see from all the knowledge he brings to the table on New Japan. You can go VIP and check that out, pwtorch.com/go VIP. Eric, we'll wrap up here with one email from JB in Detroit. He says, I thought this was arguably the best promo of Hangman's title reign. It was fiery to the point of full confidence, an area that we've been complaining that Hangman might be lacking in. He didn't back down from the idea of Punk as a challenger, and it wasn't an aw shucks type of promo. The question is, do you think that Hangman and Punk will lean face or heel? If so, who leans which way? I don't think they either one of them will be a full-blown babyface or a full-blown heel. I'd argue that Hangman's promo this week was confident, bordering on arrogant, so I could see it being considered either face or heel. With Punk facing John Silver in Silver's hometown next week, I could see that as a way to lean Punk heel on the countdown to Double or Nothing. Side note, do you think MJF will be treated as a hero again next week in his return to Long Island? As always, love the show, and go VIP. pwtorch.com/go VIP. So, Eric, we're running long, but I left this email at the end for a reason. Next week, they're in Long Island, and are you concerned with some of the segments that they have booked for that show? John Silver, hometown, going to get a decent reaction. Does Punk's, you know, baby face aura get diminished in that type of environment? Same thing with Wardlow and MJF. They're going to sign this contract in front of a mass group of MJF fans. It's not going to carry over, you know, the cheering for MJF town to town, but how will Wardlow be affected by that, you know, in the moment signing this contract? So I put all that together to just ask you, like, were these the right segments to book at this particular show, given the circumstances, or does it not even matter to you?
Well, it depends on how they play it, right? So my recollection is I'm pretty sure Punk healed a little bit.
He did, yeah.
And it was much criticized in some Torch quarters at the time, and I thought it was kind of goofy myself a little bit when they were in Long Island in that new arena the last time. And I think as long as Punk doesn't cut a heel promo before his match against John Silver, Punk's not going to be booed. Silver may be cheered as well, and that's fine. But I think the Page promo tonight suffered from, like, what we didn't really get an explanation, and I'm sure it's because Page was – this was not face-to-face, right? We would have gotten an explanation had this been a face – I'm confident last week had this been a face-to-face thing where Punk provided maybe some sort of reason or not, which either way would be telling. It would tell you where they were headed, to give Page a reason to turn heel. Page just sort of out of the blue just sort of sprung this heelish demeanor tonight. And that's the missing piece of the puzzle, is we don't know why, because he wasn't there last week and Punk wasn't there this week. And so that's sort of the mystery. And given that Punk is wrestling Silver next week in Long Island, we may not get that answer, or the answer may be warped through the sort of funhouse mirror lens that will be that crowd just because of cheer for their hometown people, which is a negative for building the pay-per-view match. As for MJF and Wardlow, gosh, again, it's really simple. Have MJF just act as a heel like he does every week, and he'll be booed. I'm not sure Wardlow gets booed no matter what. I mean, he's hot as a babyface who people will all – it's perfect wrestling, right? It's Wrestling 101. You want to see more than anything right now Wardlow get his hands on MJF and beat him from pillar to post. That's how you – that's money. That's how you make money in wrestling, or was before guaranteed $250,000 television contract sapped you of your necessity to do such things. And, I mean, it's nothing that can't be fixed if they book it the right way, but will they do that, or will they lean into it in some meta too cute by halfway and screw up the reactions? I hope not, because they've only got three Dynamites until the pay-per-view, and you kind of need to be in a better place. I guess my last thing I would say is I just don't subscribe to the sort of Hangman hasn't been a great champion thing that's sort of built up around him. He had a great program against Danielson. He was left sort of hanging in the wind without a program, which he literally talked about in a very fiery promo he did before his Lance Archer match. And so, you know, I think Hangman Page has been good as champion. The booking has let him down. Sometimes he hasn't always had enough to do. That's the ensemble nature of the show. His first reign as champion probably about to come to an end to CM Punk at Vegas, and that seems okay to me. Timing seems about right.
You could do a lot worse than doing the favors for CM Punk, you know? I mean, that's, you know, nothing to sneeze at. Well said. All right, we'll wrap it up there, Eric. Thanks so much to the callers, to our emailers. Appreciate it. Wade will be on the VIP side of things running out tonight's show. You can check him out there on the Wade Keller hotline, pwtorch.com/govip to check that out. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn, and you can go VIP and be a VIP member and check out my weekly audio show on the canvas that just dives into the art of wrestling. So it's been on a couple week hiatus because my voice has been absent, but now that it's back, we'll be back this week with a WrestleMania Backlash preview, so you can look forward to that. Also, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we've relaunched and revamped the YouTube channel, so check it out. We got some really cool content up there, daily news hits, new stuff from me, new stuff from Wade, a new show from Robert Vallejos, who also does our MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans show on the PW Torch Daily Cast. So some really cool things happening there. Make it part of your day. Check it out. We've got the stuff posted at pwtorch.com too. So if you frequent that site, and you should, for news, editorials, show reports, and more, you'll also find links to the video contents there as well. Eric, always a pleasure, my friend, to talk AEW with you. You know, VIP members can find all of your great work in the archive. So talk a little bit about that and where people can follow you on social media.
I'm tapping out. I have nothing to plug. Go VIP,
okay.
and read Zach and watch the support the YouTube channel. Yay, Team Torch.
There you go. I love it. All right. You can follow the brand on Twitter at PWTorch. You can follow me on Twitter at ZHadornTorch. Thanks everybody for listening. For Eric, I'm Zach, and we'll catch you guys next time.